Hello and welcome back to the Breachfront Podcast. Today we're continuing our expert series on GG4. We've all had, a handful of games per thing, so we're here to tell you how to do it. Today we are looking at Cloak and Dagger. So this is a pretty interesting one. Again, we're not going to read through the entire thing, but basically you drop about four strategy markers on the center line spaced out from each other. These strategy markers are just concealing. Friendly controlled models within an inch can interact to get an intel. After doing so, the opponent can place that strategy marker within 4 inches of its current position. The other thing you can do is that you can interact with enemy models, if you're within an inch of them, to take their intel token. And that model cannot take that intel token back that turn. At the end of the turn, you may discard all intel tokens from any number of models to score 1 VP if you have more intel tokens than you have scored points.
I like how we said we weren't going to basically read it, and then we did this time, unlike last time. Which,
well, this one is a little more complicated, so, yeah.
It is a little bit more. I think playing it has definitely given a different feel than actually reading it. I thought it was going to go a different way, and after getting a couple games in, it's something I've switched my strategy a fair bit to play this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I like... In this one, obviously depending on your scheme pool, but when we had kind of gone over these in the first GG4 reveal, we had kind of all had talked about, are we going to be seeing more crews at our higher counts and stuff like this. I think this is a strategy, obviously depending on your scheme pool, that you can kind of go either way on. With our last one, since I wasn't there, I think plants is definitely more going to be along the lines of more of your elite crews. I think this one could go both ways, since it is obviously going to be a heavy indirect pool with a emphasis on movement, since the strategy markers get to be moved by your enemy when you interact with them. But I think the big one, and we kind of talked about this before we started recording, is the question of, do I take them from the strategy markers? Or what I have found in some of my games, and like we had talked about, is do you take them from the enemy? Since it does have the thing in there where if you take them from an enemy model, that enemy model can then not take it back from you. Now, obviously, any of the other ones can, but especially if it's like maybe on a corner and a flank, and it's way off in the corner, and they're only maybe you each have sent one model over there, it definitely makes you think about how you want to do that, taking them from your opponent, which can be quite AP efficient because they have taken AP to grab it from the strategy marker, and then you're just taking it from them, which also can be nice too, because if you just charge in, hit them, and then take it, you've gotten basically 3 AP to out of scoring the objective and also preventing your opponent from possibly scoring it, at least with that model.
Yeah, it's definitely something where I think I even said, take a bunch of models, kind of go wide with this one when we first did the reveal stuff forever ago. And I played that way the first couple times into this. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get up there fast. I can collect a token or two right away. But the more I played it, I'm like, oh, now my stuff, well, one model may be good, but I've now consolidated because your opponent gets to place the new strategy marker back closer to them. Unless it's on corner or flank where you can really put something out on the edge, if you're in standard or wedge deployment, it's pretty easy for once you hit that once for the opponent to kind of put those other markers really close and be able to defend them. So it's harder to get a second strat token from it. So I have gone now to where it's, can I wait, can I delay, and then have a very mobile model be able to jump up, maybe not hit. The hit's great. Like, I think that's a point, Scott, that I don't do enough where you charge in and then be able to interact. So I'll have to keep that in mind. But yeah, I play a lot of Hoffman, and Watchers are great for sitting, you know, 9 inches away or behind a wall and then jumping over, collecting the token off of that model before scoring happens.
Yeah, I think you kind of touched on a little bit of an interesting aspect there too, is especially in a lot of strategies where you're having to take the interact to get the points for it, and also schemes. A lot of times, especially maybe in turn two and three, you're usually going with models early to eliminate your opponent's models, but then you're thinking about scoring your points. But I think this one kind of adds more of a different element, that going near the end of the turn with maybe your last one or two models, depending on how many of the intel tokens you need, rewards you for scoring it. Because one, it keeps them from being able to steal it from you. And if they do interact with a strategy marker, you can move it closer to your models, where maybe you could take advantage of a model that can interact, then have a free action move and interact again, so that model has the possibility of getting two. Or you can interact and then move away so that potentially your enemy can't steal it from you. Now, I've tried several models, you know, the typical fly with me's, ride with me's, leaps that can do the interact twice. But there are also some other models out there, and I saw an interesting game on Vassal where I believe it was a model that had started next to it, and their free action, it had a trigger to move itself 3 inches. So it's not something you're really going to think of, that model doing the interact, move, interact. But the person had saved a card to get that trigger and got two interacts on that off of a model that that you were not expecting for it to be able to do too. So that's another interesting aspect, those sneaky models with a trigger to get that move. But that's why I'm finding them.
I mean, if you're referring to Louisa, who has reposition on Claim the Land, she's just a broken model.
Yeah, well, I think this model was a smuggler, maybe, that did it. I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, I think that whole aspect of maybe waiting a little bit later in the turn to get your tokens has definitely added another aspect to this strategy that maybe wasn't as quite relevant to begin with when you take a first look at it.
One thing about this one as well is I usually don't plan on getting all 4 points for this. I usually aim to top it out at 3 and just keep my opponent down to scoring 1 or 2. Hopefully just keep them at 1. But usually the second and third point is enough to win it for me, so that's what I focus on. And then I usually, unlike I talked about in the last one, where I usually like to either go wide, like I have two different strategies, like area control or that for plant, this one is usually about domination. I try to go elite with a lot of highly mobile survivable models, and then try to get activation control by my trying to kill something who hasn't activated, or taking like Yoko 2 if I'm playing Thunders, because you know that's just amazing, having all those pass tokens, but just forcing my opponent to go and then taking the situation into my own hands, playing very controlly. So elite and control is kind of the way I've found Cloak to work better for me, because if I can pick off their lower cost models that maybe have ran in, or I have guns that can shoot them down on the far end that I don't have models near, it just eliminates the need. And it takes a lot of AP to build it up. And since they can only get one model, let's say if I focus my whole crew in the middle and right side of the board, they send one scheme runner off to the right. In order for it to score those top end 3-4 points, they're going to need help. They can't get enough tokens in one turn to get 3 tokens to score on turn 3. Which is a big thing to think about is, okay, you're not going to get that to at least the next turn if you only have on one model usually, or unless you've been building them up. So you can really work timing into your strategy of when you need to kill models and, you know, area control. I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, you don't have to control all the markers to still win. If you're going to get your 3-4 points off of two markers, you don't need all of them. Just kind of keep your zone moving along with your models and follow those up and through.
Yeah, I found that the deployment has really affected how I pick my crews on this one. If it's a standard wedge, I agree. I go more with the leader crews because you can't spread it out quite as far. But I think on the flank and corner that I have gone more with a higher cost model or a higher count models in my crew than I do normally, just for the fact that there's so much more spread out and than you will on a wedge or standard one. Now, granted, yeah, you do have to be careful. If you see them going with a Killy crew, maybe keeping those cheaper ones back. And if they are looking like they're going to interact to get the points, then they will be moving them towards your cheaper models, and that you can kind of maybe wait till later in the game for them to get the points and use your more elite models to score like your turn two, turn three strategy points on that. But I do agree with your point. I think this is one that is very hard to get that fourth point on unless you're just, you know, in one of those situations where you just smash your opponent. Is going to be one of the strategies that are going to be hard to get to that fourth point.
Yeah, and I think the way I've usually seen the game shake out is that each model in the crew will ideally have, you know, one or two tokens, so I haven't seen many models just stack all the way up to try and score the late game points, because it is very risky, and your opponent has a lot of agency in saying how many tokens you have at the end of the round. So that's usually how that shakes out. I also think it's pretty interesting how I think interacting with the strategy marker is better to do later in the round, because it gives your opponent less opportunity to respond, but interacting with the opponent to steal their tokens is strong pretty much from the top of the round to the bottom of the round, because at least the model that's right next to them is not able to get it back, unless they kill them, I guess. But that kind of goes to Brian's point, but yeah. I think there are a lot of different angles to this one, and definitely the more games you have with it, the more possibilities you see. First, I've only played this one a handful of times, but one of the more recent ones I played against Jim Dyson, and I spent most of the game interacting with the strategy markers because I figured that is the least interaction with my opponent, and then Jim just interacted with all of my models to score all of his points and deny me points. So you definitely have to consider it from all the different angles and see what your crew is the best at. This one really is a complicated one, I think.
This is one where you don't want to see Nelly on the other side of the board from you. Yeah. Where you want to interact in specific areas. And the denial when there's only four markers and Nelly can sit basically over one and then have a henchman or Fiona Gage sit around another one, it really starts limiting. And since you can't take them back from them, which is usually one of my go-tos for this, they are a strong contender because Nelly can also get pretty killy. There's multiple different ways you can use Nelly to smash your opponent's face in, some in keyword and some with some of the outer key hires. But as we get into who's really good at this, Nelly and area control with that denial that most of her crew has. Now, not so much as teching in her minions, because her minions aren't super survivable, and with a bit of focus hits generally can get off the board. But if you're mainlining her crew, that's where you're going to see all those benefits that I'm just talking about that really help out with this strategy. So If you're good with Nelly and Guild, this is, I think, one of the top ones in this GG for her.
Yeah, I had a game against Dixon where Nelly didn't realize she was so punchy. And not only did she kill my mature Nephilim in one activation who was on full wounds, but while she was doing it, she was making him vote for Nelly. So, yeah, watch out for Nelly. She is going to be an all-star in this one. But also something to think about if you can isolate a marker, maybe especially, like I was saying before, with a model that can vote twice on it. Typically, they're going to move those markers into their own area. So if you are going to be doing schemes on their side of the board, that is not such a bad thing because then that model can either move into their part of the board and it can either do the schemes since it's going to be going that way for the strategy markers or just continuously follow that strategy marker in there to help for maybe some late game schemes since there's a lot of schemes that acquire scheme markers in your opponent's corners, in their deployment zones, and stuff like that. So don't be afraid to interact with the strategy marker if your opponent is most likely going to be moving in the direction you're going to be going to scheming anyways. So that can actually benefit you in the long run.
I would also say this is one of the few strategies in which Lucius's crew and his keyword crew is not inherently disadvantaged, because even though most of them have 0-inch or no engagement ranges, you just have to be within an inch of a model, and there are a lot of ways for his crew to hand out of activation interacts to either steal them or interact at opportune times. So it's not really saying anything, but I'm happy about it.
You and your championing of Lucius.
There are a lot of times when he's bad, but this GG, he's finally not bad, I would say. I wouldn't say amazing, but not bad.
Well, maybe he'll get some new models in the Asses of Malifaux that will help him out with that, because I think that would definitely help him along. I think it's him himself is not bad, it's just that he's got a lot of models that in his keywords that have a tendency to suck.
Yeah, they don't suck. They just need a lot of setup to be great, or they go down too quickly. Like, they can't hold up once they get attacked. And if you don't have anything to back it up, anything to counterpunch with, because really his crew doesn't really have anything punchy, really, then if there's no threats and your opponent's not worried about, you know, it's midweight, you know, 6-7 point backup beaters taking you down, they're just going to throw everything in your face and destroy you. So that's a little bit about ranting about why you need some sort of a beater in every crew. But I was going to get back to what you're talking about with the scheme markers and schemes that go along with this. I think Cloak and Dagger, like you said, Scott, definitely leans into anything that goes towards the center or your opponent's deployment zone, because these markers, in the majority of the games I've played, the markers usually always, except for one where your opponent has like a good control over something, but they divulge to go in towards the middle. Almost always seem to like flow back towards the center of the board or back into where they already have models, so it's easier for them to get to once you take it, which is the center or away from your stuff. Very rarely are they getting pushed farther away towards a flanker they might have out there. So I think it's Sweating Bullets that likes to have things in the middle, and then the new Espionage, I believe, is what it is, where you got to have one in the center line and one in the deployment zone. Any of those or hold up their forces tends to go with this one, because you got to get in there anyway. So you charge in and then interact and you're still there. And then you are, hey, my lower cost model is also next to you. So some of those schemes really lend themselves to going in with Cloak and Dagger. So they kind of double down, unlike where I've seen in certain crews where you could be great at the strategy but suck at the schemes. certain schemes do lend themselves to Cloak and Dagger.
Oh, yeah, and I think talking about the area control crews, I think, and I had said before, on that wedge in standard, if and when your opponents interact with them, even the ones on the edge, you can angle it in towards the middle. Like I played a game of wedge with Seamus 2 in this, and he's very much about that whole death ball controlling the middle. And since she has a lot of models like Madame Sybil and Bells, and even to a lesser extent, the Dead Doxies can pull your enemy models into your death ball where you can kind of control things. And then Seamus 2 just melts models, whether they have armor or not. You can do that. But again, that is going to be, again, if you have the stuff you can do in the center of the board, or like a hold up your forces and things like that, that can definitely lend it to that kind of crew that we are getting away from in this GG, but it is still definitely something that, you know, with looking at the board and the deployments and the schemes, you could definitely do a death ball crew with this strategy. I think that's going to be one maybe you are going to be looking probably more to interact to take them away from your enemy, because later in the game you're going to want those strategy markers near you, so you don't really want to be interacting with them a whole lot to move them away from you for late game points. But early on, definitely looking more to steal than to interact with the strategy markers in that type of crew, at least on the ones I've done. I think Seamus 2 is the only one I've done, like the death ball kind of taking control of the middle on this strategy, but it did work well that game. Also helped that my opponent dived on me, and then his Anya bird died turn one. And that made me feel good and warm inside. Screw that bird.
I love that bird. I play a lot of Anya, and that bird is amazing. This is one, I know the last episode we talked a lot about those cheaper, super low-cost models. They still have a role in this one, and I think a lot of that comes in with your schemes. I think we put it down, but you're not going to want as much of your Tengus and your super interactive ones. You're going to want the lower cost, hard to kill models, or models that have a lot of, may not be super amazing on offense, but are kind of tanky, or low cost armor models. Anything that may even be able to just be a support role, Soulstone Miner, something like that, which can sit and just survive for a little bit. Because honestly, if you have a 5-point model that does nothing until turn 3, but maybe draw you a card or something and sits in the back, but later on, once that marker gets moved once or twice, walks up and grabs that token that scores you a point, there's still rolls for those things that sit in the back, or things with guns that can, I think that's the next part, things with guns, ranged attacks in this one, so you don't have to waste your AP. Because someone's got to get to that center line first. And if you don't have to go all the way to the center line, this is completely contradictory to what I just said throughout this whole thing, is where this lends itself to diving into your opponent's zone. If you're good with just getting like one marker, or playing the reactionary game, getting the last action, so to speak, and taking it away from an opponent, you can rely on them trying to get to the markers, moving them closer to you, not using your AP to grab those, and like shooting off, spend more time attacking. It's a risky game, but sometimes you can get it to pull off. I've tried 2 games that way. Once it worked, once it didn't. But once one of those games is generally, I lured them to me once they had it. So lure, great in this. Oh, you picked that up. You're trying to save that one. How about you just bring it over? Bring it to me. move to me. Now my back line, you're here, then I can kill you. Death ball crew.
Yeah, I agree. Even your lower cost ones, like I've been playing a lot of Rezzers here, and Enslaved Spirits, you know, that turn 2, turn 3, you know, they get up there and maybe steal one turn 2 and turn 3 to help you score that point. That's a 3-cost model that got you a strategy point and may be denied them, especially if they're going all killy and they have just that one model who's going to get one, and then you steal it from them, and then it dies, you know, I'll take that. 3 points, I kept you from scoring a point, and I scored a point, and then it dies, I'm fine with that. You know, not here soon I'll be switching, going back and playing my Neverborn. So Wicked Dolls, Corrupted Hounds, all those things that have a lot of movement and can still steal something or do an interact and then steal it. Those are going to be worth their weight in gold. 3 points for one strategy and deny my opponent. Take it every day.
So it's sounding like you guys are saying that this is maybe a less restrictive strategy in the sense that you could probably take a lot of different angles on it, but I guess I don't really have a point there. There's a lot of different crews, I guess, that can do this strategy.
Yeah. I think that's where this one comes more so into what the schemes are going to be, is going to, and maybe to a lesser extent, the deployment is going to be the biggest factor on if you're going to stay with more of an elite crew as opposed to maybe going like the 9-10 model crews. Because it's so many different avenues to it with the stealing factor, where the strategy markers are going to get moved to, and stuff like that. It's actually, I thought Stuff the Ballots was going to be my favorite, but this one so far has been, I think, the most, I guess, most brain power I've had to put into it, because it's just, okay, so especially maybe a little bit later in the game when you have to get more of them, it's like, well, I could have this model interact with the strategy marker, but then that's going to move the strategy marker over to them, whereas if I wait till later on, they can't get to it because they can't get to it on one move. But then if I walk up and if I do it later in the game, maybe they walk charge my model and now I can't get to it. And because I don't have Don't Mind Me, so if I have to disengage, if I don't have out of activation movement, then what am I going to do with that model? I'm just now stuck and he's not going to help me score the strategy. So it becomes a very much a little bit of a standoff on who's going to move first, or like the chess thing, you know, the, at least I'm not much of a chess player, but I've always heard the axiom that the first person who moves their queen loses. So it's you have to play that little bit of a standoff on who's going to do what to score the strategy, and then how can you counter it with what you have with the out of activation movements and stuff like that. Or if you can also use like a 2-inch engagement range, well, I'm going to just sit this model here on the strategy marker that you need to get to, but I'm not going to interact with it until next turn, and I have a 2-inch reach, and now you can't interact with it because I can just stand on the marker because it's only concealing, and I have a 2-inch engagement, so now you can't get close enough unless you have Don't Mind Me to interact with it. So it's just so many different avenues. I think this one has so many different masters that you can use with it. You can, like, again, going with elites, going with something that is not elites and has going to bring some more models. You have Nelly, you know, and Colette, that they're both, I think, are going to be good at this, that this is going to be one of the ones that they're going to shine in the GG4. It's just so many different options. I think this is the one that is going to be one of the hardest to predict on what your opponent's going to play, just going off by what their faction that they picked when you're going for an encounter.
I think what we're kind of been going down to is we've been going over Cloak and Dagger a lot, and there's so much variety to the actual strategy and how you want to play it. We've said this already, but your schemes, more than the other ones, will dictate what you bring for this strategy, because any type of master can technically do this strategy. It's not like you have to have anything in particular or any particular items in your crew. There are ways to counterplay and play this one with any single master that you want to play. But can that master also do the schemes? Does your keyword have the low-cost, durable models that you need for hold up your forces? Can it do power ritual? Isn't mobile enough to get out there and get all the way to the wings? Those are the type of decisions that will affect who you want to bring when you see Cloak and Dagger. More than, oh, this master is great for the strategy. Well, almost every master can play this one very well because there's different ways to play, and you don't need to do you don't need to score 4 points also off the strat, so you don't have to be amazing. So getting back to it, let your schemes decide who you're bringing for this one. Out of anything, go with, I can score 3 to 4 off my schemes and score 2 to 3 on the strat. I'll get the strat, but I need to be able to do those schemes.
So then, what are we thinking are the best masters for this? I know we just went through and said every master can do this, but who are we thinking are going to be the best masters for this? Now, I've been playing a bunch of Rezzers since GG4 came out, and actually since Labor Day, I've been playing just a bunch of Rezzers. So I think the top three masters in this one are going to be Von Stuck. Now, I have not played him yet at all in GG4, but playing him in GG3 and what he can just do, the different things he can bring, he's got such a good plethora of models that he can bring for whatever you need to do, whatever the schemes are. I think he's just going to be really good at that. I think dark horse in this and will be Molly. I think that, again, she has quite the plethora of models with the leaping. The little crew-looking assassins can just jump to either the strategy marker or to a model with it and score it. I think both of them... And I haven't tried.
Yeah, Krulligans cannot be underestimated in this. Like, Molly is an under dark horse, if not a favorite, for almost every GG strat this time.
And I just love this master. So Molly's gal pal, Karai, I think is going to be really good at this. And I might have to say Karai 2 maybe a little bit more, because she can... With the way her summons works, she can kind of bog models down so they can't interact, because her models are summoned next to models, so instantly you are engaged. Although Cry 1, I think a lot of people sleep on her. Obviously, summoners were a little bit bad in GG3, but... getting an Akirio and then a Goryeo summon into the middle of your crew, especially if you're a little bit of, you like to bunch up, that's never a good thing, and that just takes you forever and a day to slog through. So that's why I'll go there. The Von Stuck, and then Karai, and then Molly. I would say Karai is probably a little bit of a dark horse too, because not a lot of people think about her. But those are my two that I think are really good in this. Now, does that mean that the other masters aren't any good in this? That does not mean that. I actually have been getting quite a bit of Riva 2 in, and I'm really digging her. But those are my three I'm going to go with. And, well, I'm sure I'll have lots of people tell me I'm stupid. But, you know, my wife tells me that, so I'm used to it.
Such a loving relationship. I don't really disagree with you, Scott, for masters that are going to be good. Honestly, I think mobility more than anything, which I would probably put instead of Reva as a dark horse, probably the Castor with Obeys, because I'm going to rate obeying being very high if you're looking at just the strat alone, because anytime you can just say, oh, run backwards and go punch your own stuff. Or run back and get staggered and you can't get closer again. Gives you that area kind of control and a few other things that I'd be looking for, I think, if I was going just off the strat.
Yeah, if you've ever played against Trixie Belle, the reverse lure is a very, very powerful thing, especially in this, I think. Well, let's continue on to the purple team, because they're the good guys. I think Lucius is decent in this strategy, although he doesn't necessarily have the best staying power, so he might have to go out a keyword, which I don't do. I think Broodmother is good at this. She's kind of good at everything. She has the little bit of interact efficiency. She's very fast. She hits hard, depending on how you build her. So, as usual, I think she's good. The more you guys talk about it, makes me think about even maybe Euripides or Dreamer being competitive in this.
Can you leave Dreamer off this list? Because Euripides... James, I will not ever forgive you.
I mean, I always consider him, even if it's the wrong choice. But I'm always trying to find places to stuff Yuri 1 into, because Yuri 2 is just... he's too good for me to bother with. I only play difficult crews, so Yuri 1 can wall off strategy markers, and he has Thune to bury the opponent. So, I think he might have some play.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he does. The 2-inch reaches are also very good. I think he'd be more of like a standard wedge deployment in this, but and especially Yuri 1 is definitely very dependent on terrain. If there's some bottlenecks, he can just make your day miserable if you can't move through them or mask get rid of ice pillars. Broodmother, I mean, you can just pretty much her whole crew can be interact, move, interact with fly with bees and stuff like that. Obviously, can't do that if you're engaged, but there is the potential there. And with the Corrupted Hounds, chef's kiss on those models now. Dreamer, I mean, that's my boy. Can't wait till I switch back to Emberborn and reunite with Dreamer. And he was good in GG3, and I played the shit out of him there. I see no reason not to play him even more in GG4. But, yeah, I agree with all those. I think Marcus, you know, again, talking with the leaping and stuff like that, he's definitely going to have play in it. So I do love me Pandora, but... I don't see her getting out in this one just because there's so much better choices. But, I mean, who doesn't love to make people pull their teeth out when you play against Pandora? So, but I just don't see her making it on there. Unless I'm playing against Cole, because Cole loves Pandora.
Yeah. And I would be... remiss, since last episode I was chastised. Zoraida is also good at the strategy. I just choose to play Lucius and not Zoraida. I think it's very much one or the other type of thing.
Absolutely. I should be chastised too for not thinking of her, but I think. Which actually just made a thought come into my head here with what we're talking about. So, I mean, this is off tangent. That has nothing to do with it other than it's a GG4 thing. So in GG3, there was quite a bit of chatter on between people and stuff like that about how, like, the rankings with factions and stuff like that, and a lot of people put Neverborn near the bottom. So do we see GG4 being a resurgence of Neverborn moving up the ladder in... maybe winning more tournaments for Neverborn players and stuff like that, especially with not only that, but Angel Eyes. I've been watching a lot of the Vassal World Series stuff, and I can't think off the top of my head a Neverborn list that did not have Angel Eyes. So, do you guys think that this is going to be the GG4 is going to be the Neverborn GG?
I'm not going to say it couldn't be, but I'm also going to, before we get off topic, go, yes, Zoraida has that obey, it has leaps, it's got stealth. So yeah, don't sleep on Mama Z and Bayou or Neverborn when doing this strat.
What was that other faction you mentioned? I didn't recognize it. Is that a faction?
It's that weird, like, only strange people take, like someone from another podcast that lives in a different state. but no. Some other brownish, swampy, loves to drink beer faction. But anyways, yes. Yes to everything.
Okay, excellent. I like it when people agree with me.
I'm not your wife. I can agree with you.
Well, I think I've pretty much lost all kind of authority on this matter because I've said this every GG. But yes, I do think Neverborn is going to be strong this GG. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we just need to get some power-hungry people to play them a little more often. But I think Neverborn, if I were to switch this GG, this would be the one I would try to actually go into the purple fields.
Yeah, I have yet to be able to carry that banner of ascendancy for Neverborn into a tournament, so I'll keep on trying.
And honestly, I think a lot of it is that Nakima Broodmother is going to carry the faction on her back.
I mean, she has a lot of young she takes care of.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Obey Masters, and it's another crew that I'm very well familiar with. If we go over to Thunders, I'm going to say Misaki 2. Again, it's an Obey Master. You have some weird teleporting shenanigans. You have high mobility, some killy, some staying power. And the fact that those strat markers are concealing doesn't really matter. In fact, it almost helps her because certain things got to be near concealing terrain for Misaki 2. All of that, I think she'd be great with this. I think this is something Yan Lo, which I know I don't really play him much, could be very good. McCabe I would leave out just because unless the board is giving you a bunch of options for your mobility for Hucksters and that, not super great. Asami can be good, but I like her in a lot of other things. Shenlong, I say I slept on them last time. This would be one where I think the monks can bubble up and do a lot of their shenanigans, one or two. So I would probably go with, I hate to sleep. Lin Li's just so good, I would take her into anything. This would be where I'd take Story over Bibliotech, the librarian version. But I think... yeah, I'd go Yan Lo, Shenlong, and Misaki. Those are the three I would take just because I want to keep it diverse and not put Story keyword into everything.
So I'm a little disappointed in you, Brian. I have to say, you did not pick your girl Asami.
I chose her for everything last one.
Well, I guess I'll let it slide there. But honestly, I think this... Asami is going to be a very good GG. One, not only the fact that summoning has gotten a little bit better, but I mean, who doesn't like throwing a Jorogumo to someone's face and making them cry? But yeah, I mean, I can't disagree either there. I mean, although I think Asami and Lucas McCabe are also going to be real good. I mean, really the only one I think that maybe got hurt in this GG is Jacob Lynch, and even that not so much, but I think he could do it. Again, I think that it's going to be more dependent with Jacob Lynch on the schemes and maybe a wedge and or standard deployment, so it's not spread so wide. I mean, he can go wide, but he's been better trying to stay close to each other, so which I'm just happy because I'm tired of playing against a certain player from the indie meta and his Jacob Lynch list. And yes, I am talking about you, Tim. Happy birthday.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Tim. And I've never lost that list in multiple tournaments there, Tim. So I'd love to see that list again.
Don't give him more reason to play it. But yeah, I agree with your choices. Although I don't know so much about Yan Lo. Old man doesn't move very fast.
Old man just hops to another model, 8 inches up the board.
I just see someone model Yan Lo with a little walker with the tennis balls on the edges, on the bottoms of them. That would be cool. But
all Going into another faction that I play a lot with the guild, that my team for most of the last second half of GG. So I'm going to just not forget about Hoffman in this one because I already mentioned it. But Hoffman won triple watchers. You got staying power, you got beat sticks, and you got highly mobile models. Hoffman, Sonya Crid, Sonya 2, I think I would love in this one. Sonya 1 is really, if I think, is when I need to switch it up based on what master my opponent chose. It's the only time I really take Sonya 1 right now. So the last one, oh, that's right, it's actually Nelly. I don't play a lot of her chatty face, but Nelly, I have found when I've mainlined her and taken a few out of keywords, which I'm okay with, unlike some of us on the podcast, can be extremely, extremely good. I mean, I've used a lot of out of keyword with like three journalist models before, but still, Nelly 1 and Nelly 2 are both indecent. I actually like Nelly 1 a lot for this overall.
Yeah, I mean, Exclusive Interview is doing double work here because it's, number one, you can lock down strategy markers, but then your opponent also can't steal them off of you. So that is always going to be good.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with you on that. So the redheaded stepchild, you know, being the red faction here, is Bass ever going to see play, you think, in GG4? I mean, he didn't see a lot or hardly at all in GG3. Do you see anything he might want to do in GG4 with him?
I honestly forget that Bass exists, and that's just, I don't own him either. So that's part of the issue, is I don't think about him, even though I'm also an Explorers player. But, I mean, I've seen some lists, and I've worked around with it, but only on Vassal, because, like I said, I don't own him. But, and I guess I just haven't been super exposed to him. I might just have to give him a go and then see what I think in a couple of months.
Yeah, it's kind of sad because I really like his models and stuff, but it's just, maybe he'll get something in Ashes of Malifaux and then he'll see some table time.
Yeah, he's just kind of an odd bird that I'm not exactly sure what he excels at other than being on those center line fast, which usually is not good or bad.
He excels at having his models die.
I mean, I do know he can get a lot of those trap things out, and that's annoying.
Quick, aggressive games. That's what Bass is good for.
So, the Outcast?
Sure. Getting into the half of the game that we don't really play ourselves. But if I had to guess, I'd probably throw Zip in there just because I think Zip is generally good at these things. Boring Conversation is good. Having Diversion to shut down those utility bonuses is probably going to be good. And Iron Skeeters are good for this sort of thing. And I'll just say Terra again. I think Terra is going to have quite the glow up this GG. There's nothing punishing her for doing exactly what she wants to do. Past those two, I'm not really sure, though. What do you guys think?
I would say something that no one has been talking about, or at least not that I've heard in my groups and stuff like that, is the Vix. Kind of specifically the Vix 1. So I think one of her big things in GG3, or in also previous GGs, is that Assassinate is just like not something you'd want to play her into, because with her being, what was it, 8 wounds or something like that, she was very susceptible to Assassinate. But with no Assassinate ever in this GG, I think maybe having her on the field is going to be something maybe you see a little bit more. You got basically you have two masters. That's 6 AP plus their free action. This might be a good one to have her in. So I mean, you can't disagree with Zip. If you want to go more, especially if the scheme pool is going to facilitate it, Levy, he can bring some leafy boys, and he's always good at the killing. Or if you really wanted to, maybe Levy too, with the riders, having the ride with me's and stuff like that. I think he could be really good at this and be kind of a sneaky pick that people aren't going to be thinking about. And, Tara, obviously, this is going to be her GG to shine. But some Vix, I think, could be a dark horse. Especially with never having to worry about assassinate.
I haven't seen this master in a while, but I would probably, honestly, since they first came out with the second part, or the alternate master, like Hamelin 2, is the one I actually would love to see again. I know I'm going back to just pick the Obey Master. But I think that part's going to be very strong in this. So I would like to see Hamelin 2 on the table to see how that rolls. But I would guess he would be pretty strong in this with Terra and Zip. I mean, outside of Von Schill, because I know Von Schill's good into most things anyway. So don't forget Von Schill. But I'm going to try to say underdog it with Hamelin.
Yeah, and the reason I mentioned Tiri is I have no experience against her or anything like that, so I mean, she might be good at this, but I can't say either way since I've never seen it on the table. So what we got left? Explorers in the Bayou? Oh, and Arcanist too. We haven't done Arcanist. So let's see here. So I'm going to go, so here we're going to do some Anya and some English Ivan. And Nexus, I think, are three of your top masters for this. And again, the other ones can, Jetsa is always good, especially if you want to go with that elite. Nothing either dies or I just kill everything, depending on which version of Jetsa you like. But I think those three are good solid choices for this one.
I would say Nexus, Anya, and probably Maxine. Seeing the Tidecaller toss models and then somehow getting him up the board, and then the whole duel with the robot and his little commander. I know their names. I'm intentionally not using them because I hate those two models. But Orville, who's amazing. So I would have to go Maxine and her crew, Nexus and Anya. And that's just because Anya is my favorite. So.
Yeah. And since we're talking about Nexus, that whole Will of Cadmus thing is a great way to get interacts at the end of the round. And we kind of skipped over Castor as well, but he's also a master that can hand out some interacts at the end of the round.
That is true.
So. Definitely worth considering.
And with some Bayou next.
Yeah, and I mean, just real quickly, this does feel like a strategy where I'm struggling to find crews that don't have game into it, just because of all the things we've been discussing.
I mean, I'll easily start off with the two that have already been mentioned, which is Zip and Zoraida would be great into this. And, you could go throwback to Brewy 1 being super good in this. But I might have to give it to... probably not Wong. Clampus with your master being able to jump around. I know they're one of the newer things and being played a fair amount. But I think I'll stick with Brewmaster as the third one.
See, I like Dark Horse and Ulix because, who doesn't like to have some pigs on the board? But most of them can go fast. And they can be quite punchy, you know, so the larger pigs. So I think they can be kind of a dark horse, especially with the demise on, I think, on all the pigs. Maybe not all of them, but on the vast majority of them. When they die, they can, instead of dropping corpse markers, they can put out scheme markers, so that can help with some scheming. You know, I'll just put this model here and, well, I'm going to score a point, or you kill me and then I'll score a point. So I think they can be kind of a dark horse on that. And then also talking about fast, you know, Wong is the king of fast. So, you know, that'd be another one. Although I just don't think that, well, I guess Wong and Ulix both have kind of the issue of the staying power. Because, I mean, the pigs punch hard, but they can also die real easy. And Wong's crew, you know, hurting themselves. Granted, yes, they do have, can get quite a bit of healing in that too. But can kind of be knocking themselves down if once they get out of the deployment zone. So I think both of those would be kind of dark horses on that as well.
I mean, just saying, if you can get some activation, the Pigapult being able to place one of your size one models that can interact, just take that token right at the end of a thing, that could be good. I'd love to see the Pigapult make a little bit more of a comeback into this GG.
Yeah, and if you think Wong doesn't have staying power, you should play into the new Swine Cursed, because they are staying power. But anyway, Arcanists, the terrorists, yes, as Scott terrorists. Says.
So, I mean, he got quite a bit in this. Obviously, Colette is going to be a big one. I think Raspy, with the ability to do those interacts for the markers through the ice pillars. And you can do that on... Wait, would you be able to do it through an ice pillar onto a model? I think so. But you could definitely do it to the strategy marker. I could be wrong on doing that to another model, but you could definitely do it to the strategy markers. And then I won't say Hoffman, because I'll let Brian say that.
I mean, I already have my three picks.
I think Barkus, you know, again, we kind of touch on him with the Neverborn, but with all the Leapy Boys and stuff like that. So that'd be my three is Raspy, Colette, and Barkus.
You know, I'm not going to put Barkus in there. It's going to be Hoffman. I wanted to see how it was going to be kind of ruled with this one, because I'm waiting for when we do the voting boxes for Raspy, because you just drop a marker over there and I'm pretty sure she'll be able to vote for days from anywhere on the board. But I'm going to say Colette, Karis, and Hoffman, and save Raspy for caster balance.
Why Karis? What makes you, and that's the only one that kind of makes me go,
It helps that I've played a lot against Cole. If I've ever played Cole from the Ohio meta with his Karis, you think she can do anything. But also, I happen to like Karis a fair amount. The sub-theming for burning, but more often just the mobility that her crew has. She's got a lot of move 7 and a lot of extra movement with Carlos and with the Firestarter that... And punchy power. Don't forget that she can give a lot of injured and kill things. And pyre markers that start, you know, this time you don't get rid of them. There's no push the wagon, kick the heart cart to get rid of her pyre markers. So I see Karis and her shenanigans being very strong with this one.
I hope you're wrong.
I do too, because I don't want to see Cole playing her that much. But I feel like she's going to be good.
I hate that lady. Maybe it's because Cole's touched me in bad places with her.
At least the Watchmen are fair.
Oh, now. Yeah. Yeah.
Those were dark times.
Well, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say fair, but they're not as bad as they were before. So that is all the thing. You guys got any closing comments?
You know, like I said, my takeaway from this is go with who you really love to play for this one. I think the other three strategies definitely have masters that lead towards them. Let your heart go forth and carry you to your favorite master for this one, or let the schemes decide for who you want to go with.
I would definitely agree. The one thing I don't think we really touched on is abilities that prevent the enemy from being able to interact for the rest of the turn. That seems like a very strong thing. I know Von Stuck, his shockwave, I believe, if it hits you, you can't interact for the rest of the turn. That can really throw a wrench into things. But yeah, I'm really excited to play a lot more of this one. I think it will favor my oddball crew-making decisions, so that's always a good thing for me. Yeah.
How about you, Scott? Nothing so much. I do have a shout-out. So this past week or so, I found a new podcast that talks about Malifaux. It's called The Naughty Corner Gaming Podcast. They have been out for a little over a year. Their first one they put out was February of this year, so not quite a year yet. I started going through their backlog of stuff. Now, obviously, they're mainly talking about GG3 stuff because I haven't gotten up to their newest ones yet. But if you haven't heard them, they're out of England. So far, I've been liking them. Five episodes in, and they're definitely worth a listen. So if you haven't heard about them, go ahead, give them a subscribe and listen to them. They got some really good content out there. But yeah, that is all I have.
Very cool. Well, as always, everyone keep playing more games. We love the Malifaux game, and we will continue to play it.
Everyone have a good evening.
Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.